Thank you. You really must know how I feel to be here talking to Christians who care, who are committed. And it suddenly dawned on me that Greenbelt is on the threshold of something very important and something very fundamental, because if you take on the BDS, you will invite a lot of persecution, but you will also be true to the Christian calling. And I don't want to preach because I'm here just to share with you my experience, okay? But I've been reflecting a lot on what Jesus said. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. And it's not easy to fulfill this calling, but it is a calling from God. And we have to be the light of the world. We cannot fall into despair and anger in darkness, because we have to allow ourselves to be the light of the world so that the whole world can see the beauty of our Lord. So now I'm going to tell you, first of all, I have to include a few slides of how it all began from Beirut to Jerusalem. Some of these pictures was 28 years old, and you can see the mold and fungus all around them. In 1982, there was a big war. Bombs were falling mercilessly on a country called Lebanon, a country which I never knew even existed. And I was drawn to what's happening because the bombs were Israeli made. The airplanes were flown by Israeli pilots, and it dropped mercilessly on a place called Lebanon. I prayed very hard. I wanted to know the answers. God never gave. I debated. I talked to my Christian friends. I talked to my Jewish friends. At that time, I got many Jewish friends. Now I got less. But those Jewish friends who are true friends are really my friends. And I couldn't get the right answer. And as a Christian, I don't know what to do. And one day, I realized that God did not ask me to be clever, to be intelligent, but God asked me to abide in faith, hope, and love. And love is the greatest of these three. And when an appeal came from Christian Aid for a doctor to go out and treat the wounded, I resigned from my job in St. Thomas's and I went to Lebanon. This was a convent that put us up because at that time Israel was carrying out 36-hour continuous bombardment of Lebanon and Beirut. Then a ceasefire took place and we were taken across to the Muslim part of Beirut, which again is misnomer, because if you walk along the high street of Beirut called Rue Hamra, I counted one day there are 10 churches. 10 churches in Muslim West Beirut, just on that street alone. But the buildings were destroyed. Much of what I saw on television, life-size, three-dimensional, implosion bombs. The coastline of Beirut being shelled. And soon after this, a group called the PLO evacuated. I'm taking you back in history. That was 1982. Some of you are so young, you don't even know what I'm talking about. The evacuation of PLO involved 14,000 people being deported out of Lebanon, which means 14,000 Palestinian families have lost their husbands, their sons, their brothers, leaving behind children. But as a Christian, what drew my attention to that was these posters they put up. You can't see it. It says, "I love you, Beirut. Goodbye. Good luck." And I thought, these Palestinian terrorists love Beirut. Who are they? Terrorists do not love, because we have a picture of terrorists that's full of hatred. But these Palestinian terrorists who are forced to go love. So who are they? So I began to ask questions. Soon after the evacuation, true to form, a ceasefire started. The bombs ceased to fall, and I was allowed to work with the Palestine Red Crescent Society. So that began my involvement in a place called Gaza Hospital. Gaza, whom I'm going to talk about, which is the main theme of my talk today, but Gaza Hospital in West Beirut. And here I worked with Palestinians and Lebanese. And these people told me the most bewildering stories of how it all began. How Sabra and Shatila refugee camp was a home of a lot of Palestinians who were chucked out of Palestine in 1948 when the State of Israel was formed. And they found themselves in tents in strange places, in Beirut, in Jordan, and also in Sabra and Shatila camp. That's how it looked like in 1982. Within these refugee camps, people grew up. And from 1948, 1950, 1952, and by the time I visited them and came to live among them, the fourth generation of Palestinian children were already growing up as refugees. Children who only knew about Palestine from the name, never visited it, only from what their grandparents say. But within it, I learned about Palestinian culture. Beautiful embroidery, which Palestinian women did with silk threads, embroidering the designs from the villages they come from. So they were a very cultured people. I learned how to drink Arabic coffee, and I made new friends. And all the time I was asking myself, are these people the Philistines of the Old Testament? Are these people the terrorists? Who are they? And then I looked at the own hospital I was working in. Gaza Hospital was shelled. Doctors' quarters were bombed. Many were wounded. There was a ceasefire, as I told you, and people were taken back to be in Gaza Hospital to be treated. And I found myself in charge of an orthopedic ward. And outside, the children came back, most of them this time fatherless, because the fathers were either killed during the 10 weeks of Israeli bombardment, or their fathers have to evacuate, undertaking never to come back again. So there were orphans, sometimes children with a mother, with a grandparent, sometimes without legs, without arms, coming for treatment. The wounds were old, many of them were 10 weeks old, and osteomyelitis, which is deep bone infection, became my specialty. So there were 3 weeks of peace, 3 weeks where we actually thought we could mend the wounds of war. And these 3 weeks of peace were just suddenly broken by yet another Israeli invasion, this time on land. Israel rolled in with 600 tanks from the south and made their way to Beirut, surrounded Beirut, and came straight for Sabra and Shatila. They shelled all round, and then when they realized there was no resistance because all the fighters were gone, they came into the camp and started shooting up people. This was the first woman I treated. When she went out to fetch water for her family, she was sniped at. Following her was a whole string of wounded people. The old man who taught me how to make Arabic coffee, babies who were just young, and even my own nurses were wounded. The hospital were filled with wounded people, and at night the Israelis lit the skies with flares while the massacre continued. On the last day of the massacre, 18th of September 1982, the 22 volunteers from Christian Aid were ordered out of the hospital. And as I came out of the basement hospital, I realized that while we are trying to save a handful of people, operating day and night, 3,000 of them were massacred and their bodies were lying in the alleys of the camp. And the homes which they came back to just a few weeks before to refurbish and repaint were again bulldozed and destroyed. And some of the bodies were just buried under rubble and bulldozed over, like in this mass grave. If you look closely, you can see white lime being sprinkled on it so that the bodies were dissolved so that there were no traces of human being there for many years to come, until their bones were accidentally excavated. So that was my introduction to the Palestinian story. I went back after the massacre to find orphans everywhere, often standing in front of the wall where their family was shot down, children with nowhere to go over the Lebanese winter. And I want to tell you a special story. It will take 5 minutes of your time, but please hear me out. This was an 11-year-old boy, the last patient I treated. He was brought in by his friends late on Friday night, the night before the medical team was taken out. And his story was, he was lined up with 27 members of his family, and they were all gunned down. However, he was also shot and he passed out. And when the bodies collapsed over him, they thought he was dead, but he wasn't. So when the gunman left, his friends carried him to the hospital and we treated him. I went to visit his grandmother. This is the face of a Muslim woman. A Muslim woman where our Islamophobic culture would call the other. But when I went to visit her, basically to tell her that Munir, her grandson, has survived, and also to ask her to say something to me. Hajar made me a coffee and veiled her head with a white scarf and began. What is there left to say? Our flowers still blossom, our oranges give fragrance, and our sparrows sing their usual songs, yet my children are nowhere to be found. Beirut, you took all I had, and you took my last hope in life, and my heart lies dead on your street. Abu Zuhair, my fine young son, was cruelly cut off his roots from your soil. May the blood of whoever murdered you mingle with yours. May his mother feel some of my pain. My heart is full of remorse towards this uncaring world. Not even 200 ships or 500 stallions could carry away the pain in my heart. Mother, my children say, come visit our graves. I go to the graves and tenderly embrace its stones. I ask the stones to make way so that you can breathe. I tell the graves, look after my loved ones. I have entrusted them to you. How I envy those of you who were present when my loved ones died. Did you let them die thirsty? Or were you merciful enough to give them a drink? Life. What life is left to us? Our hearts have died and our tears have dried for all the men and women who died. God Almighty, give us patience, and my children, may our love be a lantern to your path, and may God show you the holy way. Doctor, please go away. You reopen all our wounds. We are so weary. What's there left to say? So that was my introduction to the Palestinian suffering. That morning, I was walking up and down, trying to identify my friends from the corpses that were rotting and mutilated, and then suddenly this little boy came up to me and rushed up and put his arms around me because he thought I was dead. They called me their Chinese doctor, and suddenly a lot of children came around and started asking me to take a picture of them. And as I began to focus my camera, they lift their hands up in a victory sign and said, "We are not afraid. Doctor, take our picture and show it to people all around the world. Tomorrow, Shatila camp may be demolished. Tomorrow, they will destroy us. But you will have our pictures so that you can show it to people and your friends wherever you go, that we are the children of Sabra and Shatila and we are not afraid." 28 years ago, I went to Israel and testify on behalf of these children in the Israeli military tribunal, which found Sharon unfit for office, and later on, Israel made him prime minister. The world can forget. May we not forget. May we always abide in this. So, 28 years of my involvement with the Palestinians, 28 years of trying to find peace in Lebanon, peace in the Middle East, there was no peace. This was somebody wrote this on wet cement as they were rebuilding their homes in 1982. That time you have the Habib peace plan and the Murphy peace plan, and all of them broke down. Why? Why? The cemetery is a very peaceful place. People were dead, and so there's peace. But what is a living peace? What is the kind of peace that the Bible talks about? It's a peace with justice, a peace with love, a peace with respect. And until we learn that, we will have the peace of the cemetery where the powerful and the oppressive destroy another person because they dare to speak out, because they dare to resist, because they say, we are here and we will not be rubbed out. You say that, we destroy you. And while we're talking about peace, look at this map of Palestine. In 1947, it is on this side of you, the green represent original Palestine, the white areas were Jewish Zionist settlements, and that was Palestine in 1947. And then later on, it was partitioned, the next one. So this was a partition plan. In 1948, that's the next map, move along, Israel invaded and took over most of it, leaving only bits of Gaza and bits of West Bank. And in 1967, took over Gaza and West Bank in a six-day war. And then after Oslo, we have that one that's the last one with little bits of green, which you call the Autonomous Palestine Territory. And those were the areas that were walled up today. Gaza. Welcome to the new Gaza and the real Gaza. And I think I just want to ask, how many of you have actually been to Gaza in this audience? Very few. Okay, so I'll show you pictures of Gaza. This Gaza hospital you heard just now, this is Sabra and Shatila camp. Many people in the camp came from Gaza, a Gaza which they can never go back to, never mind visit. People who have suffered and asked how long for, and that was a Gaza of the first Intifada. I first set foot in Gaza in 1988 when there was the first Palestinian uprising, an uprising of civil disobedience where women and children stood before Israeli tanks and armored cars throwing stones. And this was Gaza, stripped for those of us who have not been. It's very small. It's the size of the Isle of Wight and home to 1.5 million people. And this was the checkpoint. If you hold a British passport, you go in by this checkpoint, and this is the famous Erez checkpoint, and where Palestinians were crossed at the Palestinian crossing, if you're lucky enough to cross, and then if you're European, you use the other crossing, and most time it's closed, and you are not even crossing. Once inside Gaza, you will know the crowdedness of Gaza. You'll see how 1.5 million people live in these conditions. 80% of them were refugees from elsewhere, as their homes were taken over from other parts of Palestine to make way for Israel. These people fled into Gaza. And Gaza is not all Muslim. This was the hospital I worked in. And let me tell you, do not be afraid. This hospital in Gaza is now called Akhli Arab Hospital, which means the native Arab hospital. And guess who built it? The CMS. The early missionaries built it in 1891 as a witness in Gaza. And that hospital still functions today. They have a new chapel, and the Israelis bombed it, but the hospital is still functioning as a light in the Middle East. I met Palestinian doctors. I worked with them side by side, who worked through despite their suffering. And I met more Palestinians, faces of people who have suffered so long. Look at the faces of Palestinians. They are made in the image of God, like you and I. The children of Gaza. The beautiful Sea of Gaza. When you next go on holiday, don't go to Costa del Sol. Go to Gaza. The sunset of Gaza. But why is it so peaceful? Why is the coast of 1.5 million people completely empty? You know why? Because there's a 3 miles exclusion zone. Apart from fishing boats who can ply the seas of Gaza, you go at your own risk. You can be shot down. And fishing boats have been shot down. The trees of Gaza, always blossoming. You know, one thing it says in the Bible, be thou perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect, because he made the sun to shine on the good and the evil. This tree picture was taken by me in May 1989. After 40 days of Ramadan, where a curfew was imposed, the curfew was lifted and people began to visit each other in the family. Israeli helicopters shot at them. And within 2 hours, we have 343 wounded people in a hospital. 6 of them died while receiving treatment. And yet, when I came out of the operating theater, I did not see the dead bodies in the alleys. I saw this beautiful tree, like God trying to remind us, I am still here and I'm in charge. And Gaza is beautiful. Believe it or not, this picture was taken in last year after Operation Cast Lead. I found this orchard. They forgot to destroy it. I found this wonderful plantation. Most of other bits were destroyed, but this little bit survived. And I want to show it to you. Beautiful bits of Gaza, which they failed to destroy. And of course, familiar pictures, because it's not so long ago when you saw this on television, Operation Cast Lead. For 3 weeks, the bombs fell, destroying Gaza into a wasteland. Big bombs, silent bombs, bombs that can melt concrete. And the death toll. You know, some of us felt very strange. Why is it that we say an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth? It sounds bad. But against a background of 100 lives for one life, which is what Operation Cast Lead is, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is pretty good. You have 1,300 Palestinians killed versus 13 Israelis killed, of which 10 of them were soldiers killed by friendly fire. So maybe an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is not too bad after all. The first day of Operation Cast Lead, 250 people died. The mortuaries of Gaza, the children that were killed, bodies incinerated. And sometimes you do not find the bodies. And the family will only remember them with a picture pasted on the wall. 400 amputations just from that 3 weeks, bilateral. During July the 7th, our hospital did 13 amputations and it was overwhelming. But the Palestinians did 400. And many of them bilateral. New explosives. Some of these dimes are connected to our arms industry, for those of you who are interested. And the doctors of Gaza having to work in one operating theater with two operating tables. So they side by side, they double up and work. And these are the kind of wounds they got to treat. I got among the audience, my colleague Hasu Patel. Hasu and I worked in the 7th July bomb in London. These are us working. But we have 14 operating theatres, 18 intensive care beds, and really compare our facilities to Gaza. Maybe if we did an audit, Gaza comes up better in terms of the utilization of their resources. Phosphorus. Just to remind you, in case you've forgotten, phosphorus dropped on people, dropped on buildings, leaving wounds which burns deep. These are the close-ups of phosphorus bombs. The Israeli phosphorus is not liquid. The Israeli phosphorus is resin impregnated. So in other words, they are solid, they stay on your skin and continue to burn deep into it. Whereas liquid phosphorus just vaporize. Burning of homes, shelling of hospitals, and some of you have heard Claire Short speak just now. This was when Claire was Minister DFID and money was donated to build this rehabilitation home, and it was partially destroyed by phosphorus. Even the beautiful garden, and if you look deep within, you see phosphorus residues like that. Resin impregnated phosphorus, which ignites when you go near it, giving out phosphorus fumes. Fuel air explosive. These are what we call vacuum bombs, which sucks in buildings so that nobody can come out alive. And it was appalling because fuel air explosive vacuum bombs was used for many, many years. Just now, I showed you this picture in the beginning. Maybe you didn't notice it. Let me elaborate on it. I arrived in 1982 to Beirut and found an 11-floor building reduced to this heap of rubble, bearing 200 people in it. Nobody gets out alive. Why didn't we ban it? Cluster bombs. Assassinations. People lined up point blank and shot. Whole families were killed. Ambulances were targeted by precise shells, by drones. Can see health workers, UN compounds. If you come back to your school and realize that your friends have been burned with only skulls left, as you can see, the little girl was going through all the ashes to find her friends. Gaza was put under blockade since 2006. Whatever little food was left for the people in Gaza in the UN was also burnt by phosphorus. Hospitals were targeted, destroyed. And this hospital is not a Hamas hospital. This hospital was a PA hospital. And officially, the PA and Israel are friends. This is friendship from the Israelis to a friendly hospital. People have died. And I'm not talking about Palestinians. I'm talking about those who are not Palestinians. We started with Tom Handel, Rachel Corey, and many others, and now the recent Flotilla massacre. I think we have to always remember them and put them in our hearts because they are the best examples of people who are self-giving, who does not count their own cost, and who are prepared to put all for what they believe is right. This is the Tom Handel ward in Gaza. Schools were destroyed, many of them. Now, because building was not allowed, many children were sharing schools, running two shifts, and instead of having 1,000 kids, they have 4,000 kids in the same school. This was another school. That was a prestigious American school. Now we talk about women who have to suffer all this and continue to provide for their family. Women who have to rebuild the family with rubble. I suddenly realized that 28 years have passed and there's no improvement. The only improvement is you. You meaning all of you. You meaning Greenbelt, who is prepared to take a stand. And really, I want to thank you. Because this sort of situation should not happen again. Nobody should discover the Palestinians through their death. Nobody have to stand in front of mass grave and say, God, forgive me, I did not know. Nobody should pray what I've prayed. Give me another 33 years so that I can make amends and serve the Palestinians. Nobody have to discover that these people were the victims and not the ones that victimized. They are the ones who are wearing the refugee identity cards, whereas those who robbed them of their homeland, call them terrorists. Remember the children? I've gone back to Lebanon many times looking for the kids. I want to show them their pictures. I know they were grown up, but they will have remembered me. I couldn't find them. In my heart, I know that they will have perished. They will have died. But it is a privilege to show you their pictures. A privilege for you to see the resilience and the steadfastness and the eyes of the Palestinian kids full of hope and never fearful. And of course, I present you also the children of Gaza. They are drawing pictures of destruction, but they are also beginning to make objects of beauty, like their parents, their grandparents. And may the flowers of Palestine bloom again. And may the children of Abraham learn to live in peace. Thank you very much.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, we do have a chance to have some questions. Just to say, please, if you've got a question, hand up. We'll bring the mic round so everyone in the venue can hear it, and also the question is recorded so that people listening later actually know what the question was when they hear the answer. So anyone got a question? One at the back there.
Thank you so much for that. That was lovely. I've had a burden for Palestine for years, and yet I stand up for Palestine, even amongst friends, and call Israel a terrorist state. And yet people criticize me so much. And if normal people in Britain don't let me use language like that, what hope is there? When governments refuse to publicly criticise Israel, and that's my first bit. What do we do about what our responsibility is as a country, but also what can we do as individuals as well?
Answer that now. Okay, I think it can be very discouraging because you know it's like trying to make you believe that black is white. Okay, I know the feeling, but I think you just ignore it. You just ignore it and you press on. Okay. Now, look, 28 years ago, when I came back, I might have 10 people listening to me. 5 of them are out here to heckle. The other 5 will listen and go away. So today, I think we are more than 5. And many of you can do a lot more than me. So that is progress. It's not fast enough for the people who are suffering, but we will do it, okay? And you have to support a lot of ways of doing it. You see, just now, if you're listening to Claire Short, who went to the Claire Short thing? Yeah, she suggested a whole lot of things. Do that. We can do it individually. Okay? Now, I do not buy Marks and Spencer. Big deal, you may say. Okay? But if all of you don't, then they will realize that they got to shift. And if you tell your MP that if you continue this kind of thing, not only am I not going to vote for you, I make sure my friends don't. That counts. So we will have to make it work. A lot of changes came because the people made it change, not because politicians want to change it. It will never happen. And don't look at politicians. Look at ourselves. Look at what God asked us to do. And look at each other. And we support each other. We go forward. Never mind who says what. Be ready to be criticized. Be ready to be called liars. Be ready to be vilified. Jesus said, when men abuse you and persecute you because of me, rejoice. Because so have they persecuted the prophets who came before you. So take comfort.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions? One at the back again. You're doing this to make me keep fit, aren't you?
This is not so much a question, but I've just got back from working in Shatila Camp with the Association Najde.
Okay.
And I've been there all summer. And one of my very dear friends was shot twice when she was a small child. And it's just very strange knowing that you could have been the one that made her well. And she's now thriving, she's a hairdresser, she's full of life, and it's just quite strange knowing that you could have been the one that have helped her. So thank you very much. I was working with the Association Nudge Day.
Can you tell me what I've been working with an organisation that tries to work together with Palestinians and Israelis from the point of view of the Christian community, and they are very keen to not see a polarisation so that people are only for one side and not for the other. Can you say a bit about that? About not ending up tipping over into hatred for Israelis?
Okay. That's a very good question. And also I want to talk a bit about Nudge Day. It is a wonderful organization. If you want to support a Lebanese-Palestinian NGO in Lebanon, support Nudge Day. Okay. Now, polarization, one side or the other. Well, for 33 years, I have been on the Israeli platform. I have raised money for my church to defend the man who tried to blow up the Dome of the Rock. Okay? So nobody can accuse me of being one-sided. Maybe I've crossed the threshold and I can only talk about the Palestinians. But truly, if you're asking about Israelis, I want to ask them a question. Okay? It's a painful question. You know it's injustice. You know your army is murdering people. Are you prepared to take a stand? If you take a stand, come along. We will welcome you with open arms, and we'll do this together. And you will be the light of the world, and you will be the salt of the earth. But if you do all you can to rationalize and to defend and to silence the other people, just in case some sensitive people get upset, then you are blocking the truth. And therefore, how are we going to deal with this?
Can I just explain a bit what I was... I was thinking of when I was on this camp with Israeli and Palestinian kids together in the desert, and the leadership was made of Palestinians and of Israelis. And I was just really talking about... It's easy for us to when we're not engaged and involved, to end up only supporting or feeling that only one side is right, that is good, and making demonizing the other side, and that becomes a problem because each side supports demonizes the other side, and that's what we deal with.
But there's really no side. There's only one side. If you want your children to grow up not to hate, then you should stop hating. If you want your children not to shoot, then you shouldn't shoot first. If you don't want your children to covet other people's lands, then you should not. Only under those circumstances can the Palestinians be told, you have to reconcile, you have to forgive, because the other side has taken a stand for you.
I think we have to look on a number of levels, because clearly any group that allows Palestinians and Jewish children, Israeli children, to understand something of the other is very important. But you and I, where we are, we need to take action, and that's how I feel, and what I hear from what you're saying, things like tomorrow there's a vote on the boycott of Israel, and until Israel understands that it cannot continue to behave like this. And I think the figures and what you've shown are shocking, and I really thank you for witnessing to that. I just want to ask a question there about your own personal freedoms coming in and out, just some of the realities of the checkpoints for you and your colleagues. Thank you.
It is very difficult. But you have to, we have to resolve it with ourselves. I've lost so many friends not talking to me now. My pastor who baptized me not talking to me. I've gone for the Philistines. But I know one day they'll come back. One day they will.
Good afternoon, Dr. Swee. Can I perhaps just take up a point that you made in your presentation? You said on the 18th of September, I seem to recall, was the last patient you treated. We are coming up to September, and you may not be aware, but there is another land convoy due to leave the United Kingdom for Gaza. There are other flotillas proposed to visit Gaza. Everybody here has the opportunity, having heard Dr. Swee, to write a letter to your local newspaper as soon as you become aware of the fact that the Gaza convoys are on their way. Wherever you are in the United Kingdom, if you look on some of the Palestine websites, you'll see the details, but each and every one of us here today can write a letter to their local paper referring to the presentation that Dr. Swee has given this afternoon and make the readership in your locality aware of the facts of life.
Thank you, Jane. Keeping you really fit.
It's probably a very long question, but apart from the Zionists, could you explain to me? I fail to understand how any church can promote and say it's okay what Israel is doing. It's beyond my comprehension. Maybe from what you've experienced, you could. Because I hear people here saying, you know, that their church says, you know, support Israel. And I cannot understand how you can support murder and what we've seen. What?
Yes, that actually is the question which I've got to answer myself, you see. Because we are taught in church, you shall love the Lord thy God with all your heart and all your might and all your soul. And we thought that Israel is God's people, and therefore we have to support Israel come what may. And then we forgot what Jesus said, you see, that you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And then the next thing Jesus says, who is your neighbor? Then he brought out a Samaritan. You see, so really, when we are so blinded, you see, one thing wonderful about this green belt, not only am I talking, I'm also learning, you see. If you just look at what the church teach you, you see that way. But you look sideways, and then you see what Jesus does. You see what he does, the Samaritan, and he does all that. And he began to say, you know, call God our Father. How dare I call God my Father? Because I'm not an Israeli Jew. But really, therefore, there's no special people. And once we have that level playing field, then we can see clearly. I used to have Israel at the center of my life. Now I have Christ as the center of my life. And in that way, I'm graceful. I'm grateful for God's grace because I would have continued by all my Christian friends, full of Judaism, full of Israel, full of everything, you know, and going to the kibbutz and all that, forgetting that Jesus died for me.
Hi, I'm a consultant surgeon from Scotland, and I was interested that you had your article published in The Lancet. What was the reason for them withdrawing it?
Yeah.
And have you had the opportunity to present your work at BOA or at any of the other sort of things so that we can educate people in the profession who can then it can be a trickle-down effect to their patients and to GPs and others that are involved in the profession?
I think if you just go to the Wounds of Gaza on Lancet Global Health Network, you'll find that this article has been withdrawn because of factual inaccuracy, that's what they say. And actually, behind it, there was I don't know how many emails calling me a liar and all this, that were manufactured figures from Hamas and so on and so forth, all coming from the Israeli lobby. And I want to give it to Lancet that they have really suffered a lot taking a stand for Palestinians because just before that, they did a whole series on health under occupation. And they were already coming under a lot of attack because of that series. And Richard Horton was vilified wherever he go. Mark Regev singled him out and so on and so forth. So taking off our article is not a big problem. They put it on for 28 days. So that's good. That's pretty good going. It's picked up in 10 languages. Thank God. Praise the Lord.
Hello. Thank you very much for that amazing revelation of what really the Israeli state stands for. And although dialogue is important, nobody's saying that Jews and Arabs and Israelis shouldn't have dialogue. Now, I myself am Jewish. My name's Abe Haim, and I'll be participating in the boycott debate tomorrow. But I do urge you, as a Christian community, there's the Kairos document, which was brought up by all the Christian denominations in Palestine, urging people of Christian faith throughout the world to support the call for the boycott. Just in terms of what was shown in Gaza, there was the Goldstone report done by a Jewish Zionist judge, Richard Goldstone, who is famous now for his work in Sarajevo and Rwanda. And he actually revealed that these were war crimes. And the Israelis are furious. They've called him a traitor for actually revealing and underlining what Israel as a state was doing. It's the Israeli state that we're wanting to actually pressurize as communities. I think it's very important. I don't know whether you've got anything to say about that.
Yeah, thank you very much for your contribution. I really value that. As I say, you see, I've lost a lot of Jewish friends, but those that I've made since I came back from Palestine are the greatest people. And you are one of them, okay? Because I know what it is like to stand up. And your community just misunderstands you, sometimes deliberately, sometimes, you know, honestly. And it is very painful, you see. But keep up the good work, okay? And if they try to silence you, it's because what you are saying is very important. Otherwise, they won't bother to silence you.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. I'm afraid we're going to have to sort of end the session now. Just before you do disappear, I've been asked just to point out that every day at Greenbelt from 2 till 3 in the afternoon in the Angel Lounge in G-Source, there is a chance for you to go and ask questions about Israel-Palestine. Or questions perhaps you thought, I don't want to ask in a big tent like this because people think I'm stupid. Go along there and ask them, because it's really important that that you find out more. I think that, Jill, you're going to take Suiyang to the Amos stall in G-Source. And so if you want to go and ask some more personal questions, then please do so. Okay. Yeah, the Kairos document that has been mentioned is on the Friends of Sabeel stall in G-Source. So go along, get a copy of that. It is a very, very important document, and the more that we as Christians can actually read that, endorse it, get it out, is tremendously important. Just to one bit of venue management I need to do. Can I please ask that we clear the venue as quickly as possible after this? But don't go now, because we have had a very moving, very powerful time this morning, and I want us all to show our appreciation to Suiyang. This has been fantastic. Thank you very much indeed.